Welcome back to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We're exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Mordaunt, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Toby Altizer in for GP this week. Jump right now to the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Our guy from Sharp Football, our pal Mr. Warren Sharp. Warren, what's up, buddy? Congratulations on the review of the 20, or the review, I'm sure, the release of the 2025 Football Almanac. Love it, dude.
Thank you so much for having me. Really happy to be done with it. It's a labor of love, but always great to have it in people's hands. And it's up on Amazon now as well if you want to buy the printed copy. But I've got a secret offer here for you, just your listeners. If you use the code GRANT, you can get it for $1 up at sharp.football. Go to sharp.football. You can get the PDF. It's regularly $30. It'll knock off $29 off that price to $1 for you guys.
I'm going to use that right now myself.
I will be using that as well.
I love that so much. So as we kind of get through that process, I think it's such an amazing thing. Your 2025 football previews, you said, available now. What the data that goes into putting this together with all the roster turnover, how do you do that? How do you sort of reconcile what a team was with what a team is coming up?
Well, the first thing I do is I strip away wins and losses from last year. I absolutely reject the notion of John Madden's you are what your record says you are. I look at why teams played the way they did last year, what went into it. Were they playing with injuries? Were they playing with bad coaching that's not going to be different? How did they accumulate these wins? Were they winning a lot of one-score games? In your case, you went 8-4 in one-score games. How are you accumulating these wins? And then I like to look at that roster turnover, as you mentioned, and the coaching staff turnover. What players were lost? Were they any good? What players are gained? What do I think of those players? What do my draft expert think about the players that they drafted, and then just judge not just what I think a team is, but then it's a matter of, well, how good are they compared to the rest of the teams that are going to be on their schedule? Because that's really at the end of the day what's going to drive the wins and losses of 2025. It's not just whether a team is good or not, it's how good are they compared to the other teams on their schedule. So it's getting a good understanding of that schedule as well that the league gives out to teams in May. And then it's just a combination of all these factors. So it's a lot of work. It's months of work, but it's definitely put me in a real good position to have some strong thoughts on various different teams, either being good or bad this year.
What were some of your takeaways after taking a look back at Washington's season last year?
The biggest thing to me that I was blown away by, and I knew this in the moment, but I didn't know it to this degree, was that EPA that they gained on their fourth down plays. I mean, they did not go for it. Teams will remember, or fans will remember, how great Washington was on fourth downs and instantly just think that Dan Quinn went for it more often. And we were great because Dan Quinn was just such a gambler on fourth down. No, they actually went for it less with Dan Quinn than they did in prior years with Ron Rivera, et cetera. The difference is that they converted 87% of their fourth downs, which was the best rate of any team in modern NFL history. And what was the most mind-boggling thing to me when I went back and watched every single one of those fourth down conversions using film study, they did not have a single quarterback sneak. And you and I know that this hack for fourth downs, especially fourth and ones, is using a quarterback sneak or a tush push nowadays, as the Philadelphia Eagles do all the time. And it's just crazy to me that they could have that much success without using a single tush push. The Commanders gained nearly 55 EPA on their fourth down plays. That ranked better than 23 NFL teams this past season for every single one of their offensive plays. Like, adding up all the EPA gained by every single offense for 23 teams, the Commanders, just on fourth down, exceeded that EPA. They had more EPA than even the Kansas City Chiefs, who obviously went to the Super Bowl. So it was the most efficient modern NFL team on fourth downs, and that was one of the things that clearly stood out to me the most, and is that, unfortunately, is going to scream regression to some extent this upcoming season. The question is, how far does that regress? I don't think it drops to the league average because of the creativity of the play calling and the quarterback in Jaden Daniels. I still think it should be above average results, but it's going to drop back. So then what does that mean that you guys are going to have to do in terms of avoiding those fourth down situations. You're going to have to be better on early downs. Otherwise, you're going to score fewer points in 2025 just because some of those drives where you were converting at an 87% rate, you're going to be giving the ball to your opponent.
Warren Sharp with us here on Grant and Danny. Toby in for GP. So we've been talking about this in, you know, anecdotally, Warren, an awful lot, where you go, 12 wins was awesome. NFC title game was awesome. We had a great time. We haven't done that much around here for 30 years. But Hail Marys don't always happen. The kicker for the Giants doesn't always get hurt before the pregame. And Malik Nabers doesn't always drop a pass. A Saints play, I think it was Juwan Johnson, doesn't always drop a two-point conversion to get you a win. Sometimes those things regress, and those are just kind of anecdotal type things. You mentioned the fourth down percentage. What else might regress here or might look different year over year, even if the team hasn't gotten worse on paper?
Yeah, one area is, like, I don't know that the personnel defensively is going to be that much better. I think we could talk personnel on the offensive side of the ball, which is where I think some more impactful moves were made. But when I look at the defense, I am worried about the defense. Last year, you guys played the second easiest schedule of opposing offenses, second easiest schedule of opposing quarterbacks, and you still ranked 25th in defensive efficiency despite that. And when you run down the list of quarterbacks that you played, especially like from week 12 through 18, we're talking about games against, think about these quarterbacks, Cooper Rush, followed by Will Levis, followed by the tandem of Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler, followed by Kenny Pickett, followed by a rookie Michael Penix Jr., followed by Trey Lance. And that's not going to happen this year. You are not going to be able to play, like, what is that, six straight backups or rookie quarterbacks to close out the season. And what, you guys won five in a row to obviously vault to the 12-5 record to close out the year. So that's not going to happen again. But I think your defense is going to, you know, you're playing a more difficult schedule and you ranked 25th last year. So all of this sounds pretty bad. The one way that you guys can offset that, though, which is something that's not really bankable, however, it could be coached and executed this year, is you could be better defensively from a takeaway perspective. You ranked 20th last year in takeaways. And if you look back to what Dan Quinn did, the way that he earned a job here in DC was with his defense in Dallas. And the thing about Dallas's defense is, on a down-to-down basis, it wasn't like a top three defense, but where they excelled was at the takeaways. And the takeaways that they had on defense, some of which they would return for touchdowns, pick sixes, or fumble scoop and scores, they would allow their team to be plus 10, plus 11, plus 12 in turnover margin. And that goes a long way to winning games. That clears up a ton defensively. I will just throw a parallel to another team in the AFC, the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills, people look at the Bills and will say last year, well, they have a decent defense. No, their defense was terrible. The Buffalo Bills defense was not good. You can read the chapter on the Bills in the book. The difference was the Buffalo Bills were like plus 20 in turnover margin because of all the takeaways that their defense was able to secure. So if you guys are able to get some more takeaways this year, it absolutely can offset the fact that your defense might not be that much better. And then it can help propel you to winning close to the same number of games as you did last year, even with a worse defense.
Talking with Warren Sharp here on Grant and Danny. Toby Altizer sitting in for GP. You were really high on Jaden Daniels and going into this season, the impact that he can have. What stood out about his rookie season, and what are some places where you think he can improve going into year two?
Well, the execution, just the coolness under pressure. Obviously, we mentioned the fourth down conversion rate where he was passing lights out on fourth downs. It's a very small sample size. But just his ability to execute when it mattered and not to get flustered. And that really, to me, comes from the drilling that he does with that Cognilize virtual reality training. I don't know why more quarterbacks around the NFL are not, and in college, are not using it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely well worth every buck that it costs for different quarterbacks to take advantage of it. But what I also liked about the way that he worked with Cliff Kingsbury that was a little bit surprising in hindsight looking back is just how great the Washington Commanders were at scoring points early in games and building quick leads, which is very important and is something that is something that I really harp on a ton. They led at halftime in 10 games last year. They led after the first quarter by an average of 42 by a total. If you add up all the 17 games, they led by 42 points after the first quarter, which was the fourth best margin of any team in the NFL. Their 92 points that they led by at halftime was the fourth best margin of any team in the NFL. Their ability to perform early in games with good scripted plays and solid execution is going to be vital this year, and is going to be, you mentioned, like, what can he do to improve? This is something where if he maintains status quo, to me, that's an improvement. And I say that simply because defenses are going to make adjustments now. They've had all offseason to go back and look at what Cliff Kingsbury was doing with Jaden Daniels, with this Washington Commanders offense early in games, some of the scripting and the things that they like to do offensively. They need to maintain the ability to jump out in games. That obviously does help the defense. That will obviously, in terms of complementary football, put opposing offenses playing from behind the eight ball in terms of their second half performance. And then they will be more predictable with their passing rates and allow your defense to potentially get some more of those interceptions and turnovers. So it's going to be incumbent upon Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury to try to start games quickly in 2025, even though the opponents now have more tape study and film study on what you guys like to do. But I just, you know, we ranked Jaden Daniels as one of the top quarterbacks. You saw the rankings come out by the owners and GMs and scouts. I know you talked about on the show about how they ranked Jaden Daniels fifth best quarterback. Like, the world is really high on Jaden Daniels right now, and it feels like maybe it's setting him up for some disappointment this year because everybody is so high on him. But I'll tell you, a lot of quarterbacks do take a jump in year two, and I'm optimistic that he can be in that category of quarterbacks who get even better this year with just the dedication that he puts into the craft.
Warren, go back to last year, and then it's going to inform my question about this year upcoming, just kind of where you're at on this guy. So basically, it started mid-October when they played Baltimore. There's an abnormal game in there where they put an uncompetitive Carolina team, talking about Washington, beat the brakes off of them. Mm-hmm. Again, backup quarterback did that. And you and I could have done that probably against Carolina at that point. Then they struggled scoring-wise against the Bears, struggled offensively against the Giants, Steelers, and Eagles, and then the Cowboys. Some better defenses in there, but we're sitting here yelling about Cliff Kingsbury going, dude, you got to do something different. Terry's just on the left. Everyone kind of has it figured out. It seemed like he tweaked on the fly to avoid that cliff after a little bit. Kind of give me what you thought of Kingsbury last year, and then maybe moving forward this year is kind of the perfect pairing, or maybe not, with Daniels and this offense. Just where are you at on Cliff Kingsbury, play caller, offensive mind?
That's a great point that you made, because Cliff ran into that cliff for years when he was coaching the Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
And it was the question of, you know, our offense is figuring out Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury and what they're trying to do offensively. And some of the data, though, since Cliff, obviously he was not coaching in the NFL for a little while, and then he's back with the Commanders. Some of the data is actually showing that it was more of a Kyler Murray problem in terms of what Kyler Murray ends up doing later on in seasons with he's a diminutive quarterback who gets banged up a lot. Sometimes he plays later in the season's injured. Sometimes he's playing healthy, but just worn down, especially with how much he's running with the football himself and getting hit and taking hits, and just his ability to throw the ball down the field later on in the season. If you look at my Arizona Cardinals chapter, you'll see I write a lot about that. So it was very impressive to see Cliff not necessarily reinvent the offense, but just find other ways to open up some more creative aspects to it. I think in part there were limitations just from a personnel perspective with the offense, right? Beyond Terry McLaurin, wasn't a whole lot else there. You had Austin Eckler, who was contributing early, and they would catch teams with some surprise runs or mostly passes, but then Austin Eckler gets injured for a little while as well. And so your running back room is a little bit more limited from a personnel and a skill set aspect. I think it's going to be positive to bring in a guy like Deebo Samuel this upcoming season, because Deebo is a very atypical wide receiver. A lot of these wide receivers that are making the big time money, like Deebo was, are the guys that are getting open down the field, separating, you know, stretching the field, opening things up for offenses, being those possession type receivers. Deebo was utilized by Kyle Shanahan in a very different manner. So many passes are caught close to the line of scrimmage. Debo is a yak machine, leading the NFL year after year after year in his yards after the catch. And that's exactly, ironically enough, what Cliff Kingsbury will be able to get after this guy. Is that the vertical offense? It's more that horizontal air raid offense that Cliff will be able to deploy, giving defenses something to think about pre-snap, using some more pre-snap motion, hopefully, and working Debo Samuel around. That will then help Terry McLaurin, just with Debo out on the field and providing that other receiving threat. I don't think teams last year really cared that much about the other receivers in Washington. They could focus a little bit more on Terry, and then, like you said, always on one side of the field. Defenses were able to slow down the passing attack with a rookie quarterback and his number one weapon in Terry McLaurin. Now it's going to be a lot more difficult for them to do that, because I think of the ways that they'll be able to get Debo Samuel involved as a receiver, doing some things after the catch, using in pre-snap motion to help influence coverages. I'm looking forward to that creativity. But I will say this, Cliff will have to continue to stay creative all year long. The very best offenses are those that are really doing rigorous self-scouting every single game. After that one game, looking back at the last game, the prior four games, and the full season, and trying to make improvements. What can we do better? What can we do differently? What's actually working that maybe we didn't realize was working as well as it was? What are we doing too much of? All of those types of things, they should be their analytics department looking at that on a week-to-week basis and trying to continue to bring more creativity, because this schedule is going to be brutal. The schedule is not going to be easy, especially down the stretch. And you're going to be playing a lot of offenses that I think will be successful and can put up points. And so you guys are going to have to match them.
Warren, on a full scale of the NFL real quick, who's a team that you looked at and you think is going to surprise either good or bad this year?
Well, this team is supposed to do well, but not very many people are talking about them. And that to me is the LA Rams. I think the LA Rams, when I went back and looked and just fully understood, okay, this is a team, their number one wide receiver last year was Puka Nacua. He goes out week one and he doesn't return until week eight. Their number two receiver was an aging receiver, but he's still their number two, Cooper Kupp. He goes out week two. He doesn't return until week eight. So your top two receivers, think about it, like Terry McLaurin and your number two, are out basically the first half of the season. And then they also sat them week 18, the last week of the season. They didn't play any of those receivers. And yet the LA Rams last year still won 10 games. Like, they still won 10 games without their top two receivers playing like half the year. So I think that's a team, and Matthew Stafford was terrible on third downs. It was terrible inside of the red zone. I think that's a team that can impress. Now, they were the ones who gave the Philadelphia Eagles the most challenge last year in the postseason. So it's not really going out on a limb and saying I think this team's going to be much better than anybody thinks, but nobody's really talking about them, and I think they're going to be a really, really competitive and solid team this year. A team that, unfortunately, I think is going to step back, in my opinion, could be the Cincinnati Bengals, which is a team that, like, they've got a stud quarterback, one of the best in the NFL, obviously ranked higher than Jaden was, top five by most owners and GMs, but the issue is, what is there around him if he's not throwing the ball perfectly to his elite wide receivers? They don't have a great run game. They don't have a great offensive line. They don't have a great defense. I mean, those are three important aspects to football. Running the ball is not quite as important as the other two, but that's a team that really is solely built around Joe Burrow. And if he's taking as many hits as he's been taking the last couple of years, it's inevitable that he'll eventually get dinged up, have some issues from a health perspective. And I just worry, what is this team record-wise? I mean, he's been brilliant for a couple of years, and they've only won 9 games each of those seasons. Like, at some point, and their win total this year is 9.5. Like, at some point, Burrow's either going to get injured or his play might fall off a tiny bit. I don't see the defense stepping up. I don't see the run game really stepping up this year. So I have concerns about them. So those are a couple of teams around the league who are playoff competitors, one of which I think will be better than people think, and one of which I think will be worse than people think.
SharpFootballAnalysis.com. Use that promo code GRANT for $29 or what is it, $28 off, $29 off, $1 for the 2025 football preview. Warren's behemoth telling you what's going to go down this coming season. A pleasure as always, Warren. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Really appreciate it. There he goes. One of my favorite analysts in all of sport, a really, really sharp dude. That's a terrible pun. I apologize for that. But the fact is, he's really smart, and I like having him on. Here's what I want to do before the double play, which is 3:45, and your chance to win tickets during the Beltway Blitz to Government Mule at 4. If this Terry thing goes south, like way south, I don't think we get to the worst where he's getting traded and he won't play for the team. But if he doesn't show up in training camp and like suits up in week one and isn't himself and then gets, you know, a soft tissue injury because of it, he's never really himself this year. If Terry's not Terry, can Jaden be Jaden? That's my question next.
Terry, have you heard from Jaden specifically?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, I've heard from a lot. We've had a lot of great conversations. And, you know, I'll keep the specifics between us. But, yeah, it's great to have his support, honestly. And to know that he has my back and to see how we've grown in our relationship, not just on the field, but off the field. And so to know the value you bring to your quarterback and to know that he sees and feels that means a lot to me.
It's not like 110 a week. It's not, if you don't have him, the offense just dies.
Yeah, he's not Jamar Chase. He's not Justin Jefferson.
Welcome back. It's Grant Nanny here on The Fan. Toby in for GP. So I sort of posited this, and I wanted to kind of find out in real time what I thought. Talking to Warren Sharp. Always a great guest. And sort of thinking about all the scenarios with Terry. If this goes as bad as it can, in my view, it looks like this. I still think a trade is out of the question. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. And if so, yell at me, call me names, totally fine. But I still think a trade is out of the question just because it doesn't make feasible sense really for anybody. He's playing here in some capacity or another. The worst case is as follows, Topes, I think. He doesn't come to training camp, and like on the eve of the regular season or like an hour before or something, or even a week or two into the regular season, whatever deal is going to happen finally happens. Whatever they work out gets worked out, contract or no, extension or no, just something gets worked out. And then he shows up. And he's training on his own. I know that. You know that. I don't have to see it. I know it. That's Terry McLaurin. He's going to do what he's supposed to do. But there's a football training that you just can't do by yourself. You can't do with sleds alone. You can't do with rope ladders. You can't do in a training room. You do it playing football. You simply have to. So you go to football, not really ready to play football. Wouldn't be necessarily his fault, although one could argue, but that's not a point. Not the point. And you don't get the real Terry. You get a diminished Terry. You get a portion of Terry. You get a soft tissue injury, Terry, because he didn't go through the training and rigmarole. You get more bumps and bruises. You get a hamstring or a groin or a discontented guy. Whatever it is, the worst case scenario is he's here, he's got to play under contract, and he's either not incapacitated, but limited, not himself, not really that much better than the average bear. That, to me, is the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Agreed?
Yes.
If that happens, I'm not predicting it, but saying if it does, can Jaden still be Jaden? I think that's my essential. That's kind of the essential question also for the team and for a couple people that have called that have said, we got this great quarterback. I'll take an average receiver. I'd rather have a great defensive end than Terry McLaurin. I mean, I'm not saying that's how I feel, but that's how a couple people have said that. Can Jaden Daniels still be Jaden without Terry McLaurin as Terry McLaurin?
So I'm going to go in a roundabout way of saying yes and no. Ready for this? I think that Jaden can, yes. Can the offense overall be as good? No. I think that Jaden can still find a way to make things work. He made things work last year with Olamide Zaccheaus. He made things work last year with De'Ami Brown. But also you have to factor in the fact that why is De'Ami Brown so wide open getting one-on-one? Because people are more worried about Terry McLaurin. Why did Olamide Zaccheaus have such a good game against the Atlanta Falcons Sunday Night Football to clinch a playoff spot? Well, because two people were always dedicated to Terry McLaurin. I think that Jaden can get things done if you throw me and you out there at wide receiver. I think him with Cliff together, they can scheme up anything. And so maybe this is, for some people looking at it and saying, well, then why do you need Terry? I think the offense overall hurts when you don't have a dependable playmaker, because who was he going to late in games when you needed it? Who was he going to at the end of the game against Cincinnati when no one else was on the same page except for Jaden and Terry? And Jaden said, you know what? I'm just going to throw it down in the end zone. Terry will go get it. They're going to miss that. You're going to miss a reliable playmaker, because as much as people love to romanticize, well, the quarterback can make up for a lot of perils and make up for a lot of sins. Look at some of the teams that we talk about all the time And each of them has a number one playmaker. And one of the teams that doesn't, that we talk about quite a bit, is Baltimore. And how often do we talk about Baltimore and go, Lamar's awesome, but man, he could use a receiver, right? So I think you need to have that guy, that number one option. And then some people seem to believe that Debo can step into that role. I'm a little bit down on Debo. So I would say that you need to have Terry, but I don't think Jaden can make anything work. It's just I don't think the offense can be as good if you don't have that number one playmaker at his full potential.
So I'm looking at trying to find some correlation between the one big game you mentioned, the Falcons game, where Terry had zero impact and the offense was still pretty damn good. It was the Jaden Daniels show, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
127 yards rushing for Daniels, 227 through the air and three touchdowns. Pretty special day, right? McLaurin was barely involved. And I think that's the only game where you look at it as a quote-unquote big game for Daniels that didn't also feature a big game for McLaurin. The other prolific games, think of Cincinnati, McLaurin, huge day. Think of Arizona, McLaurin, very good day. Baltimore, two touchdowns, both to Terry McLaurin. And you kind of go down the list.
Even into the playoffs.
Yeah, into the playoffs. The prolific Daniels games featured big plays from Terry McLaurin. So I don't think so. And I think that's an argument for McLaurin and company.
Interesting.
I think if McLaurin is not himself, whether that's via if he signs this afternoon and it's a sprained ankle or it's a disgruntled Terry McLaurin, whatever, we're talking about a diminished version of the guy. If he's not him, I don't think Daniels does what everybody thinks he's going to do this year. And that is not down on Daniels at all. I love Jaden Daniels. Yeah, and get me say nothing bad about that guy. And I love the Debo Samuel signing. I just look at the rest of this personnel and I go, we're doing a lot of Brian Robinson, a lot of Zach Ertz. Those guys are just not special on their own. Daniels and everything around them makes that workable, right? I think Eckler's fantastic. Oft injured, you can't probably go north of 100, 125 touches for him unless you risk injury. So again, you've got 400-500 touches for somebody that you got to account for. They got to go somewhere. And if we're doing a Michael Gallup thing,
yeah.
If we're doing a last year's version of Jamison Crowder, Lamondre Zaccheaus, Dalmy Brown, it's so diminishing. I mean, my it goes back to my whole philosophy on offense. Yes, you need scheme. Yes, you need a great O-line. Yeah, you got to have a great quarterback. Everybody's got to have a dude that you can't check. And I don't know that Terry has gotten to that point yet. I mean, see Quinyon Mitchell in that Eagles game where he's pretty covered most of the game before we start moving him around some. But you need weaponry. Even if you don't, unless you've got Mahomes in his prime being the maestro, knowing that he's basically playing ball control, so his defense can be great. And look at Mahomes' numbers last couple years when they've morphed into a defensive team. They're not the same. For me, every great guy, every great QB has had that weapon in some way that either takes pressure off or either is the easy button or something to get you those big gaudy numbers. Joe Burrow's not throwing for 5K and 45 touchdowns with Wesley Financial Group and Bennett. He's not. He's doing it with Ja'Marr Chase, who's the damn superstar, who just got 40 mil. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think it's interesting to hear from your perspective because you would think it'd be flipped with the way that we talk about the guys.
Right. Yeah.
But the reason that I think that Jaden can get it done is I think that he can really do just about anything by himself to an extent, right? Obviously, he needs playmakers, needs a scheme, but I think he can do a lot. The reason that I think, or the way that I would put it that I kind of agree with you is that I don't want to put Jaden in harm's way. And I think that's what happens when you don't have a Terry McLaurin. That's what happens when you don't have a run game. We saw that in the second half of last year, right? They didn't have a run game, so how much of the run game, you talk about the Atlanta game, how much of the run game was Jaden Daniels? It was all on him. And so I think you put him at risk when you don't have a guy that you can just trust, a guy that you feel like can win one-on-one, a guy that you feel like can throw a quick screen out to the left and he takes it to the house. Like, if you feel like you're lacking that sort of weapon, which, by the way, it kind of helps you when you have a Debo to now open some, hopefully, some bigger holes and some bigger things for Terry McLaurin. So I think that he can still get it done, but you're opening him up to more of an injury risk because more is put on his plate. And to me, I don't want him to always have to play Superman. I want him to be able to be Clark Kent,
yep,
75% of the time. And then that 25% where it's 2 minutes, we're down by four, and I need him to go score a touchdown, now you can pull the cape out and go be Superman. I don't want him to have to be Superman 75% of the time like it was the second half of last year.
I'm with you. And that was my big complaint last year heading into the season was how could this be it around him? You're making this guy, and he's incredible, do everything. And then that's what happened as the season went on. But it's just so wonderful he could do it. That, to me, is not a sustainable model, as good as I think he is. I mean, I just had someone tweet me. I'm at Funny Danny. Toby's at Toby underscore Altizer. Didn't Josh Allen do it last year with nobody? And that's why he got so much credit and ended up being the MVP.
100%.
He didn't throw for 4,000 yards. He had the same number of passing touchdowns as Aaron Bleepin Rodgers last year. And we think of that as a disaster. And the point is, he put up these, frankly, meager passing totals in today's NFL with nothing. And it's like hero work. It was goal line stuff. It was him as a rusher, him as a playmaker, some of these huge moments. But in terms of passing productivity, the 15th most productive quarterback probably. Baker Mayfield had more yards, touchdowns, and yards per attempt than all sorts of stuff. Pales in comparison to what Lamar Jackson did, or Burrow did, or Goff did, or even, you know, Sam Darnold did. Just saying, yes, when you're at that level, he's got to be Superman because they want to try to build elsewhere. I'm hoping that Daniels just keeps this going and is at that level too, where no matter how the team's built, you're in the AFC title game every damn year. I want that for us, the NFC, but you know what I mean? That's what I want too. But I think right now it's not fair to ask Daniels to do more. And I think you need your playmaker.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know that he can do more, frankly, in the second half of last year with what he was doing.
Yeah, what else he supposed to do?
I mean, he was playing at the top three. Like, imagine if Jaden Daniels played like he did the final six games, like the final three games of the year, aside from that Dallas game, and then in the playoffs. Imagine if he did that for 17 games. He'd win the MVP every year. Right?
Like, yeah, or be in contention.
He'd be right there every single year.
Until they got bored and gave it to Josh Allen. 800-636. Come on, I'm fooling with you. I'm having fun, having a good time. Beltway Blitz at 4. Give you a chance to win government mule tickets. Double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. You know, Tobes, I was tempted to share something today. But I can't do it today. It has to go Friday. Because I won.
Oh.
I won minorly, but majorly. If that makes any sense.
Off the field or on the field?
It's off.
Oh.
It's an off-field win. And I'm going to tell you something. I know I'm sounding like John Gruden, but tell you something, man. I could not be prouder of this one. This was me saying no. I will not accept this. I didn't accept it. I'm the hero of the story. It's my origin story.
Okay.
It's where something happened. You could go one of two ways. You could become the villain, right? You could let it consume you, or you can be the hero, the champion. And I chose to be the champion, and I was, and I am. Greatness happened. I'm going to save it for Friday. I almost did it now, not even realizing, because it's on my mind, what's going on in my life. But I'm like, you know what? It's not appropriate for right now.
That's an incredible two-day early tease. I'm really proud of you. A 48-hour tease. That's a new one.
You don't see that much in radio because it's not really helpful. It's not like part of the thing they teach you to do.
Yeah.
So if you could think of it, come back Friday at 3:45. You should do that because I will share.
Put it in your calendar.
Wait, you're off on Friday.
Not this Friday. Next Friday. Supposed to be next Friday.
I think it's this Friday you're off.
No. See, someone got their dates crossed.
Oh.
It's supposed to be next.
Okay.
And we're not even supposed to be talking about it because it's a whole surprise thing that I'm doing.
Whoops.
Yeah. So
Danny's working every Friday the rest of this month.
I'm working.
That's what I heard.
We'll talk to the right people about that. In case you're listening, family.
Nothing's happening, by the way.
Darius made a funny joke. Ha ha.
I'm sorry about that.
Darius.
I'm hilarious.
A funny joke that Darius made.
Come on, Dad.
It's what we do during the double play. The double play is driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now it's time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. Toby's going to go on his double play to take some pressure off me.
Yeah, so when I'm supposed to be working on Friday, I have a really, I'm trying to figure out, I have a passion, Danny. Very passionate about sports.
Yes.
That's obviously not what we're doing the double play about. There's something that I wish I could get into. I don't have the work ethic. I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I don't have anything necessary to do this. But I love barbecue, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a YouTube video last night, about 30 minutes, detailing a barbecue joint here in D.C. area and just the origins of how they got into barbecue. And they're like taking classes down in Texas, Danny. They're taking like master's level classes on how to make barbecue and now taking it here to DMV area. I want to do that. I would love to do that.
Would take a class?
Yes. I would love to do something like that. I need like a giant smoker. I want to be out there checking my brisket. I want to leave it out there low and slow, all that stuff. Know when to wrap it, tell by the feel of things, looking at it and be like, you see this fat here? It's rendered nicely. This is how we like it. We need to leave this, you know. I want to be able to do all that stuff.
Yeah, because they know so much stuff.
They just know, like, they're looking at stuff like, you see this? And I'm like, yeah, I see that. I see that everywhere. And they're like, yeah, but you see, this one's perfect. I'm like, I don't see any difference than the other one, but that one's perfect. I want to be able to make barbecue at a high level like that.
Yeah.
Like, to me,
it's very manly.
Yeah. I can make pulled pork like that. Yep. You know, that's cool. But I'm talking like, I need to be able to make a brisket that people are like, wow, that's like competition level. Like, I know they just had the barbecue battle down here on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Uh-huh.
I would love to be able to make barbecue at that level. Now, I don't have the money. I don't have the patience. It's always too stinking hot outside. All that stuff. I'm probably complaining and never going to actually do it. But my gosh, if you could give me the ability to just, you're sitting out there with your whatever choice of wood you're working with.
Oh, yeah.
And we're not talking.
And you know the difference too.
Yeah.
It's like, would you use an apple wood? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, and like the way that these people are so good at it too, where they're not using the pellets and stuff. They're like, we got to burn off the bad smoke. We got to get to the good smoke. We got to make sure we keep it at this heat. We want to do all this stuff. It's so cool. It's
like,
so
okay,
scientific.
Myron Cope, I get you.
It's like such a scientific thing to make great food that I always crave. I would love to be able to do that.
Yeah. I marvel at it. So we all know that turkey is dumb. Right, everyone's aware of that fact that turkey's dumb. Thanksgiving is about the sides. It's about stuffing and mashed potatoes and bread and rolls and joy. Turkey is the chore. It's what the day is around. So, of course, you have to have it because it's tradition. And you choke it down. It's a conveyance system for gravy, cranberry sauce, and the other good stuff.
You can do a little bit of the dark meat.
Right? You have to do it. But, again, it's so much. But turkey itself is what you just, it's boring year round. You eat it because you're trying to be healthy. You slice your turkey, put it on a sandwich, and you get sad. These barbecue people can make turkey.
Yes.
Delicious. My spot, old spot, Hill Country. Rest in peace, Hill Country. And right by Cap One Arena.
Yeah.
I told people, they're like, if I go there, what do I get? So you got to get the brisket. The lean brisket is so good. I mean, you can get a quarter pound, a half pound, whatever. I mean, just sitting there ripping brisket. You can use sauce, you can not use sauce, whatever. It's so bleeping good every time. I'm telling you, nobody ever believes you. Because, like, if you go first, get your brisket, get that done, pick your sides, whatever, have fun. If you go a few times, I'm telling you, that smoked barbecue turkey, you would never in a million years pick it because, again,
it's turkey.
Everybody knows turkey is dumb. And it's the same thing in the deli counter. It's the same thing. You go, and I guess I'll do a half pound of turkey. When you're buying cold cuts for the week, I guess some turkey. And you get either the package. I'm telling you, that smoked turkey, it does the same thing when you hold a piece of brisket that's done exactly right. You can put your pointer finger out. You can drape the brisket over your pointer finger. It'll hold together, but it'll drape over. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Like, it's not going to sit. If it sits flat, you didn't do it right. But you can also pull it apart easy without any effort. I'm telling you, that turkey, stupid, dumb, boring, sad turkey, turns out ridiculous. And that's what made me realize that's what this is. That's what barbecue really is to me, is taking the parts that maybe not the best and making them incredible. You know what a burnt end is? It's like, yeah, it's kind of fatty. It's like not that great. And they're just like, wait till we're done with it.
Ugh.
Watch this bleep. Look at us science this. Watch this mountain country hillbilly science on your ass. We'll make it so tasty you won't want anything else. It'll melt. I'm with you, dude.
I just love how they're able to understand all this different stuff, what they need, how to do it. And then it's just so good because the best part about it is like there are certain things where people are really nerdy and really scientific about it. And then you get to the end and it's like, okay, cool. You get to eat this stuff at the end, Danny. And it
That's
is so good.
Yeah, I love
it's so good. Even when they screw it up, so to speak, and they're like, it's not my best. You're like, it's the best thing I've had today.
Yes.
Maybe this week, this year.
It's certainly better than the salad I had on deck. So I appreciate
you.
Good double play, Tobes. I like it. Get you guys a chance to win government mule tickets. We'll do that in 5 minutes when we blitz. We're blitzing so hot right now. Come back.